Hello, fellow rabbit hole dwellers. Yet another week here at Rabbit Hole Stories. Thank you again for joining us. Today we've got Nicholas on the show. On his Twitter, he says he's a financial atheist, and that was one of my first questions that I asked him because I didn't know what that meant, but it was a fascinating answer. And he's the host of the first and only Swiss Bitcoin podcast, and he's a full Lightning node maximalist as well. So yeah, it was a great conversation. We spoke about value for value, Lightning network, and all that sort of stuff. But what value did you get from it, Joel?
I think just generally speaking, the idea behind our show, because we want to highlight different people. And Nicholas is all obviously someone I know from the Swiss Bitcoin community and sort of the German speaking one. And we want to highlight those voices because he does a lot of stuff in the background. So you're changing the cap now as well. for the audio listeners, I'm wearing my cap backwards, and Ian is now as well. But this was the idea behind the show. We feature these people. I think it was a cool episode to see that someone who's on paper, not very technically, got into Lightning and is fascinating to learn more by trial and error. And it just shows if we all do that little bit, I think we're going to push Bitcoin forward.
Yeah, and and with our show as well, we wanted to get the signal out there for UK and Europe audience as well. And it's nice just to sort of like bring in more people from Europe and sort of get their sort of message out there and their signal. So yeah, it was great. And guys, we won't delay you any further. Let's go down this rabbit hole with Nicholas. And as always, you know the drill. Stay curious.
Welcome back, everyone, to another episode here with Rabbit Hole Stories. And today we have someone from my part of the world on, and we have Nicholas from Switzerland on. I was just thinking, Nicholas, it's hard to translate Dezentral Schweiz into English. So we just say decentralized Switzerland for simplicity reasons. How has your day been so far?
Yeah, I've had a nice day working a little bit in the fiat mine. And yeah, I enjoy now to speak with you guys.
It's a pleasure having you, Nicholas. And I was just having a quick look at your Twitter handle, and it says financial atheist, host of the podcast that I can't pronounce, Fall and Lightning node maximalist. Mate, what is a financial atheist?
Yeah, actually, I don't really know. So I've came myself up with this term, and I think atheist, like in the term of religion, I don't believe in the common knowledge of financial literacy and so on. And I think with Bitcoin, we can call this a good term for Bitcoiners.
No, I actually really like it. When I first saw it, I was like, oh, that's interesting. And I was just curious as to how you would explain that. But that makes sense because, you know, financial systems, financial narratives, rhetorics, whatever you want to call it, they are rooted in some kind of belief or ideology or narrative. And I suppose Bitcoin, I'm guessing, I'm hoping you might share this as well, is it provides something new that we can sort of build upon and not rooted in an old financial system. Is that right? Or am I going off in a completely different direction down your rabbit hole here?
No, I think you've got this right. I think Bitcoin is something entirely new. We haven't seen anywhere before. I think it's the right time to change the monetary knowledge of the people. And I think you with your podcast are doing a great job. So, yeah.
Yeah, likewise. I mean, for us few people who understand Swiss German, Nicholas is actually the host of the podcast there. And it's a really special one because it is in Swiss German. And for people who don't understand the language, even though it has the word German in it, it's not the same as if you would go to Germany or here to Austria and speak with people, because it really has different rules, different pronunciations, very much different dialects. And so if Nicholas and I speak locally, we sound completely different at the end of the day, but we still understand each other somehow. So I'm curious, before diving down your Bitcoin rabbit hole, what made you start a podcast and why did you decide to go with the Swiss German angle?
Yeah, I've started in the Bitcoin space with a lot of other things like Blocktrainer 2121. And I just felt like giving something back in the space, because I think most of you all know, if you think more about Bitcoin and you want to share this. And so I've started a small blog, and I've made a few smaller articles and so on. And actually, I've never had such high interest in this, but another podcaster from Germany, Lodi, you might know him. He has also a German-speaking Bitcoin podcast called Sound Money Bitcoin Podcast. And he's from the banking space, and he wanted to talk with me about Lightning, what we also do today. So he invited me on his podcast, and that was about, I don't know, two and a half year ago. And so we discussed a lot of basic things about Lightning. So how it actually works, what are payment channels and so on. And yeah, we've talked about that, and we made two episodes with that. And after that, I thought, why not do my own thing? So I started my own podcast, actually, almost about 2 years ago. So I started on the 1st of January and had a... you know, there are a lot of German podcasts, and I thought... yeah, how can I do something different and still have something something rare, let's say. And I thought, yeah, do it in Swiss German. There are not a lot of people speaking Swiss German, and a lot of Swiss people are mostly a little bit, yeah, so we love our country and so on, and our language, and I think that's one thing, it makes the thing like it is, so yeah.
And from the sounds of it, I was speaking to Joel before we started this recording, and he was saying that, you know, your podcast is very insightful, and like I said, Joel's been on it as well, and I think it's valuable having Bitcoin scattered across the world, signaling Bitcoin, and obviously you're doing a good job at doing that. But I'm curious, and I'm eager now to jump down into your rabbit hole story as to how you ended up doing this podcast in the first place, and what was your Bitcoin origin story? How did you first come across it?
Yeah, that's also a funny story. I've started day trading a little bit with a friend of mine. He brought me into that, and slowly I've recognized that's not my case of earning money. So I've invested in a lot of different cryptocurrencies and so on, and slowly got further into Bitcoin. And as I said, I listened to a lot of Blocktrainer, a lot of 21, and yeah, slowly I've learned more. I always watch YouTube videos. Also, I listen a lot of podcasts. Most of the time, when I'm working and don't have to do stuff that is really mindful, so I. Basic stuff. I just plug the AirPods in and listen to a lot of different podcasts, and most of the time, Bitcoin podcast.
So, when was your first sort of light bulb moment, I suppose, with Bitcoin, and how did you want to learn more about it, and did you sort of have any specific interests in Bitcoin? Or was it just a general respect for it?
I've always had in the back of my mind a little bit. So Bitcoin is something special. So I've heard a lot of it in the news and all-time high and stuff. And when I started investing in cryptocurrencies, I've always knew in the back of my mind Bitcoin is in the first place. And that just slowly got more hardened. And so I don't really have that one moment I knew Bitcoin is is the only thing, but it slowly and slowly hardened with every effect I've learned about. So I don't remember something special.
Yeah, I think if we all need to think about our rabbit hole story and you go like, when was the moment I really found it? It's always hard to tell, right? But for the people that know you in the community, they also know, so first of all, the podcast. Second of all, if they follow you on Twitter, you get some great responses. apparently you were also good with fetting people up in DMs, like people trying to rug pull. I just see that tweet before. I thought that was hilarious. But yeah, you also spend a lot of time in the Lightning ecosystem and with Value for Value. How did you get into Lightning? Was it just spending a lot of time listening to podcasts and then hearing about it, or was there also maybe some trial and error on your end?
Yeah, of course. I don't know how it is in the beginner English space or something. In the German space, there is they push really hard for self-sovereignty. So run your own node, verify your own transactions and so on. And it became, like something you need to have as a Bitcoiner. In the early days I've started, and so I'm interested in technology, and I like to handle with computers and stuff, and so I've booted up my first node. I've started with an Umbrella node on a small Raspberry Pi 4, and I just learned about by doing. So I've opened a few channels, I've talked with a lot of people on meetups, on my podcasts as well, and listened to Bitcoin podcasts, YouTube videos, and so on. And it's just something I've learned by doing.
For me personally, I was always scared of setting up my own node. I thought, I'm not technically minded. I don't really understand this side of things, and I think that was kind of like my own personal barrier. But actually, when you are understanding the value and importance of doing it, you're incentivized to actually get your ass up off the couch and to actually sort of figure it all out. And I think that's what another aspect of how great Bitcoin is that incentivizes you to actually start to learn new things that you wouldn't have otherwise, learned or understood. So I think, for me personally, setting up my node was definitely a learning curve, and it wasn't an easy task for sure. And I'm still grappling with it in some way. I'm still trying to fully understand how it all works. But that's, for me personally, how, I think we should approach it, unless you've got any other suggestions or ideas, Nicholas. But I know you're already or were already technically minded, but for me it was definitely something I had to sort of like really sort of decide to do, and that was on the basis of Bitcoin, really.
Yeah, I'm myself not very technical, so I'm not a coder or something. I don't develop software, but I also had to start with a simple Umbrella node. So you have your beautiful UI and your blinky and shiny buttons and so on. But I've developed myself with small step into different software. So as I said, I first run my Umbrella node. After that, I switched to Citadel. That's like a fork of Umbrella, but better because of free and open source software. And after that, I've got into Raspberry Blitz. This is also developed by another Swiss developer. And now it's a lot of community-based developing. But now I'm running also a Raspberry Volt, and this is One step more. It is not a UI. You just do everything on terminal, and of course it still is a small barrier for me. I'm don't feel very comfortable in the terminal, but if you take it in small steps and you want to learn about it. For me, it was a nice step, because most of the time you can do a lot more with Terminal and not just UI, because you are always reliant on software and other stuff. And Terminal is like bare bone.
Yes, and if I remember back to the days when I got into Bitcoin, a lot of it was, my first ever Bitcoin wallet was just basically GUI interface in the terminal, and you had to learn to use the commands and everything. So this is always the hardest entry to get started, but it's the best learning experience. And from the looks of it, you then continued plugging along. You started out simple. You now went, we could say, fully hardcore. If you look at the state of Lightning now, and I know Lightning always gets a lot of hate for like, oh, you know, there's more Bitcoin in like wrapped Bitcoin or whatever, or in Samurai or in all of these things. Where do you see it? Are you on the side of, I prefer it growing gradually and slow, but it's actually being improved on? Or are you more on the side of like, hey, we should really, you know, get this to like, I don't know, 25,000 Bitcoin and then start pumping the numbers?
Yeah, so on Bitcoin terms, of course, it should grow slowly, and we should do slow and small steps into the future and into new features and stuff. But I think layer two, it's totally okay to push the limit and to do something special or more abstract. So yeah, I think Bitcoin is built to do exactly that. It is built to give a hard main layer, like, I don't know, the basement of a big skyscraper. It just don't moves, and we can build on that. If the basement isn't sustainable enough, the skyscraper will never be fully built up. So yeah, small improvements always a good thing. Also, talking about it, I don't know, 1 or 2 years is very good, because it also helps the people to understand what is actually doing. I think in other projects, also in Lightning, but that's okay, people don't understand the new updates or new features. And in Bitcoin is often different, because the feature is talked so long about, and then it comes and most of the people understand it. So I think that's a good thing.
Sorry, one of the things that the Lightning Network allows you to do, right, is zap sats to each other, and that's great. I love it. And that brings into the conversation for me the whole value for value ethos, if you like. And like, we have a QR code that pops up on our channel, and you know, if you're streaming this from our website or whatever, we've got opportunities for you to zap some sats to us and things. And you know, we want to sort of encourage that as a ethos, and if you find any value in anything that we say, or you just want to sort of like contribute in some way, then the opportunity is there. Have you got any thoughts about value for value? Is it of any value at all? Is there a future in it?
Yeah, I'm myself a bit fan or aficionado of value for value. Most people don't know about this, especially in the music industry. Small players are very, very hard to earn any money. So I have a few friends making music, and on Spotify you always get nothing. And the same with podcasting, by the way. So most podcasts don't earn any money from Spotify, Apple Podcasts, or whatever app you're using, because it's an open standard, RSS feeds. They are open, you just can download it. It's very easy. And the thing is, most podcasts are financed by sponsors and ad reads and so on. And I think with value for value, you can undermine that. You can, you don't have to be reliable on sponsors. So also for the listeners, I think in podcasts, ads in the middle of discussions, I don't like it. So always when I'm listening to a podcast and they are reading an ad in the middle of the discussion, I always forward to, so I don't never listen to that. Of course, they get money if they listen to or not, but I don't think that's the right way to do that. And if people like your podcasts, your whatever, it can also be a YouTube video or a title, a music, or also blogs. Joel, you're also into that. So almost everything can be done with value for value, especially digital stuff, because it can be duplicated infinitely. So there's another Bitcoiner who told us a few years ago, everything that's digital can be and will be duplicated if it's on value. So if people like what you're doing, they will do it ever what you want. And yeah,
that's great. And when you were mentioning about Spotify and things, because it's like a mainstream popular outlet for this sort of stuff, and you know, obviously you got other various ones like Apple and Deezer and things like that, but you've also got like Wavelake, which is we were speaking to Sam from the Lightning Store a few months ago, and about his contributions into that as a project where you can upload your music on there and sort of like get streamed sats. So you know, this sort of stuff is coming, and it's, you know, it's becoming more prevalent, and as obviously Bitcoin becomes more popular and mainstream, these things will just create a whole new marketplace and a way to provide value for people. And one of the things that you mentioned about sponsors as well is, yeah, I do the same when I'm listening to podcasts, when I'm at work, you know, I'm listening, all of a sudden it just interjects with this pre-recorded script about their sponsor. And, you know, of course, these people need to get paid for their hard work, particularly if they're putting this stuff out every day and that becomes their, you know, full-time job within the space. You know, you've got to balance the putting a Bitcoin signal out there versus, you know, how you can live your day-to-day life. But I suppose having sponsors, you're in danger really of restricting your real unhindered opinions on things, because if you're sponsored by a particular company, you know, you might be limited in how much you can actually say, because you want to continue being sponsored and paid by those people. So I suppose there's that danger as well. I don't know if you've got any thoughts about all that.
Yeah, actually, I've listened to that episode with Sam a few days ago. And also today I've started into his podcast. He has started a podcast with his co-founder of Wavelake, and I think that's a very cool model. And yeah, as you said, you're making yourself dependent on your sponsors. There are a lot of examples for this. So a lot of people try to make themselves independent with their own work, like podcasting and so on, and after that they can go into how do you call that, like entrepreneurship, and they think, I'm doing my own thing and I don't have to do what my boss is saying. But no, your boss now is the sponsor. And a lot of people don't realize that. And I think with value for value, you don't really have a boss. Because if you do something like a subscription model with your listeners, you have to do something because they subscribe actively to your content. And value for value is just you do it when you want to do something, and if the people like it, they will give value back. But if you do nothing, you don't get any value back. So it's like a very economic, it's very economic, and in the terms of the free market as well.
And I suppose I've actually listened to this at, I think it was Dev Day in Prague, just before the conference, where the Buemi from the Albi team, Roy from Breeze, and I think the Spanish big YouTuber, I forgot his name, Luna, whatever his name is, they were speaking about this, and Roy from Breeze actually said, you know, with value for value, you can also sponsor. Like, you don't need to do a contract with, let's say, company A, who, I don't know, sells notes, like pre-done notes. They don't have to pay you per episode. You can say, hey, feel free to pay whatever. Maybe there's a barrier, like maybe you have to invest at least, I don't know, $1,000 for 10 episodes or something. And you, like, in the description of the, you know, tipping function or in the Lightning transaction, you actually have to put in, you know, maybe sponsor, company name or something. And he's sure that there will be other tools that would also make this more easier. So maybe there's even more space to actually add more information to that transaction. But this will be an option. So the creator still gets the money at the end of the day. They can survive. It's done through value for value, so there's not a lot of friction with like bank transfers and things. And guess what? If the company doesn't like it anymore, this is the risk, as you said, on the open market the creator has, right? But it just opens up more possibilities. The big question then obviously is are people willing to spend their sats and actually sap people? But what I've seen from your Twitter as well, you're also very active in actually boosting a lot of the podcasts you listen to.
Yeah, I really like this model, and this is why I boost myself and give value back. So I think this is very important because a lot of Bitcoiners are preaching this. So yeah, value for value and stuff. But if I look closely, I see a lot of people are just doing like the minimum or some case even nothing. That's okay. Everyone has to know if this is value for you and you want to give something back. But I think as soon as the creator stops creating his content, there are a lot of people recognizing this. So, oh shit, I should have given at least a little bit. I mean, I boost when I listen to podcasts, I stream sets like 21 sets per minute. That's not a lot. But if I like the episode, I will do a boost and give sometimes 10k sets or some cases 20k. Like Lodi, the guy who invited me to the podcast and brought me into this, he just uploaded his 200th episode. And I said, hey, I like it. I want to see more of that. And I sent him 200,000 sets. So I'm giving something back. And yeah, I think that's the right way. And the best case is you can also give a value split to, like, say, your guests or your co-hosts or your production, like someone who is handling the cutting and video editing or something. Or what you can also do is, like, if you have music on your podcast, you can do a small split for the music creator. And that's really nice, and I think we will see a lot of this and a lot of more advancements in this space in the future.
Yes, and I guess, you know, I know it will sound stupid, but like, yes, we still are early, and it's not the first time that we've tried to change the advertisement model. I mean, having worked in the media, I've heard for years subscriptions are inevitably going to fail, you know, there will be something else. And guess what? The only thing that stays are subscriptions. They're actually a huge thing in the whole world now, also in tech and things, if you think about your software that you're using, and advertisement. And this will probably always stay around. This doesn't mean we can somehow change the format of these types. We just need to be a bit more clever about it. But I'm curious, you said you also, I know that you also offer splits on your show. If you actually look at your show and you look at the amount of sats coming in, do you notice that, like, for example, when the price pumps, suddenly you get more tips or saps? Obviously, when it dumps, no one is spending any sats. Do you recognize patterns like this, or is it pretty much consistent, you know, listeners and fans sending you value because they appreciated what you did?
Yeah, that's a small problem I have, because I've linked my value for value stuff to my main node. And the problem is I get there a lot of routing and stuff, and I don't have any specific numbers. So I myself don't even know what amount there are coming in like streaming sets. Of course, I see the boosts. They are on Fountain, or you can also download Helipad. That's a plugin for your Lightning node, and you can see every boost with the text and so on and the amount of sets. And of course, can I see. But I have to say, I don't have a lot of boosts. There are a few guys doing it from time to time, but I can also in the stats, I can see there are like, I think about 14% of people listening on Fountain and Value for Value apps. That's not a lot, but as you said, we are still early. A lot of people, of course, listen on Spotify, Apple Music, because it's easy, and they are listening to their podcasts forever, probably. So, yeah. Also, I think we as a creator have to do more in this space and have to push it a little bit. I myself probably do it a little bit too less, but just say it every episode. If you like this episode, consider boosting or consider streaming some sets, because value for value.
That's great insights. Thank you, Nicholas. And I want to go off topic and ask one more question before we round up the show. And that was a comment you made in your original Explain Your Rabbit Hole story. And it was about Swiss people. Maybe I got the inference that maybe they were resistant in some way because they love their country. And it sparked a thought in my mind that I've had before about people sort of patriotism and their sort of like, you know, resistance because of their, you know, country or their patriotism. And I don't know whether you've got any comments to make about that at all, because that's what come up in my mind, and I've had my own sort of thoughts, but this is your rabbit hole story, and I'm just curious if you had any sights of that.
Yeah, I think we as Swiss people, we are in a very privileged situation, because we, as you know, we always say, I don't want to do this. I want to get into the EU and stuff like that. So we always do our own stuff. And also, I think often the mindsets of the people of the country represents that. And of course, we are also open to other countries, but it's like in the heart, a small piece that says, I want to also, as I said, I want to also listen to Swiss German podcasts, because it's easy. I like it. Also on meetups, we have a group, De Zentralschweiz. It's like a meetup group, and we like to have people from Germany or other countries. But we just like to be also in this common space, common language. It's a lot more easier for most people to speak their mother language.
Yes, and before I leave it up to Ian, I have one more question, Nicola, as a fellow Swiss. This is sometimes something, it doesn't bother me, but, you know, this is like hyped up in the media or sometimes also a bit hyped up by Swiss companies. Yes, we were very early in our country with, you know, crypto adoption, and I'm saying crypto trigger word people, because, you know, Cardano, Ethereum, all of these shitcoin foundations, they are based in Zug. Quick tip for anyone, if you actually walk into CV Labs very confidently, just go to the bar and you want to have a drink, you can actually cross off on any of the shitcoin foundations and have your drink for free. I've done that numerous times. I think this is how we short these bastards.
We should do a meetup there.
Yeah, honestly, I think it's not a bad idea because Zug is generally missing a bit of a meetup. But you have a lot of these crypto companies, and I think a lot of people think that automatically Switzerland is like a Bitcoin country. Apart from like the meetup scene, how do you perceive it? Is it that Swiss are easy to orange pill? What is your experience there? Or do you think this is maybe a bit of that, you know, media campaign where they confuse Bitcoin and crypto?
No, I think Swiss people are very conservative. So they like what they always knew. We also have, let's say, very good financial system. So of course we have that Credit Suisse story and so on. But also, as you said, the regulatory space for companies, I say that in a full mind, like Cardano, Ethereum, and so on, it's just perfect for stuff like that, because we have a very open law and clear regulations on stuff like that. And of course, they're coming to us. Where else? So, yeah. I think there is a lot of media involved in this, as you said, of course. So, yeah, media is a I don't like really that media, that old legacy media.
Yeah, I agree. The media is, how can I say this? It's a space that can sometimes confuse you, and that's as nice as I'm going to be. But as you probably know, because you've confessed to watching a few of our episodes, Nicholas, that we end the show with the All Roads Lead Back to Bitcoin challenge, and it's trying to prove the hypothesis that, in fact, all roads lead back to Bitcoin. And the word and phrase that we give you, you've got to try to somehow bring that back to how that might relate to Bitcoin. And the word that Joel and I have come up with was circuit. How do you think circuit might lead back to Bitcoin?
Circuit, so I think about that of computer circuits, of course, mining, nodes, everything what is Bitcoin is on circuits. Sometimes it's assembly-specific integrated circuits, sometimes it's just normal computers, but also circular economy. I think that's also a bridge we can build. And I think we are on a good way, especially in Lugano with Plan B. Let's see where it leads.
Yeah, I think when we discussed the word, I also went, you know, circuit board, circuit generally as a whole. But I kind of like the idea of circular and circuit coming together. And you're right. And, you know, speaking of Lugano, where we briefly met at the conference as well, it's incredible to see within a year, I think they went from like 70 merchants to 350. So there is definitely a trend there and, you know, people are getting interested.
Yeah, I don't have the actual numbers in mind, but also to see like on the conference itself, the first year they had a lot of shitcoin and crypto stuff in the villa. It was like the sponsor or the the business side of the conference. But in the second year or last year, they changed it a lot, and they have had also almost nothing. So it's nice to see that they are also moving into Bitcoin only, and of course it's sponsored by Tether, so a little bit has to always be there.
Yeah, of course. We're not gonna offend any Tether people over here, but we get what you mean. Nicholas, it was great having you on. Thanks very much for your time. If people want to get in touch, where's the best place to find you?
Yeah, I'm on Twitter, I'm on Telegram. Just DM me and yeah, let's chat.
Perfect, perfect. And for anyone in Switzerland, make sure to visit Decentralized Switzerland, is what I call it, or Dezentral Schweiz, because we'll link everything below. So you can, yeah, no, who knows, maybe keep up on your Swiss German if you want to learn it. It's a difficult language, but you'll get there. Nicholas, thanks for your finite time, and also thanks to the finite time of our listeners. And as always, stay curious, guys.